It's a huge pleasure to bring to you an interview with David K. Johnson, Donald Trump's three-time biographer. He's got plenty to say about the Donald, the greatest scam artist in the world. He scammed his way to the US presidency. In this first one, we look at blue-collar versus white-collar crime, the great double standard, which we rabbit on about quite a bit. We look at eroding trust in institutions. We look at the Donald himself, political donations, freedom of speech. It's a good old chat. Check it out. David K. Johnson, Donald Trump's. He's a law and a tax professor from the US and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. We sit down and have a good old chat to David. No, well, here the government is benefiting from proceeds of crime, because if people are washing money through the casinos, I mean, we just had the two major casino groups, Star City and Crown, gigantic ASX-listed, stock market-listed companies that have been done for systemic criminal activity, washing money for Chinese crime gangs, triads and so on. And what happens? They've both now finally been investigated, there's been inquiries and so on. Not one director has been banned for even one day. There has been no, these are the guys that have the fiduciary, the legal responsibility for what, for running a criminal, for overseeing, being stewards of criminal enterprise. A criminal enterprise. Systemic money laundering. Proven. Not one accountability, anything like that. But if you go down to the local grog shop and you steal a bottle of Plonk, they can put you in jail.
Yeah. There's a fundamental thing taking place all around the world that you're describing. And that is that we have very effective blue-collar laws. You walk into what we call a bodega in America, a little shop, like the Easy Marks, I think you call them here, and you hold the place up with a water pistol, we'll send you to prison. No problem. Mm-hmm. But you do what Donald Trump does. You sell people things that aren't there, or you cheat them through a contract, you cheat them with a pen. Nothing happens to you. And part of the reason, having sat through white-collar crime trials, or parts of them, if a prosecutor gets up and it takes 3 days to explain to the jury, or even 3 hours, what the crime is, that inherently, I believe, induces some doubt. And in fact, what do defense lawyers get up after a three-hour argument and say? I'm sorry, my client is accused here of violating the tax law. Could you follow what these prosecutors spent 3 hours trying to tell you? Section da 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 da, subpoint this, versus da 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 da. I mean, it's all gobbledygook. And you think my client committed a crime? He may have done something wrong, but it's not. And juries often let people off in those circumstances, unless somebody's stupid enough to write a memo that says, oh, I ripped the government off for a bunch of money.
I had to pay we call them enforceable undertakings here. Oh, look at this record payment by this bank. $100 million for a bank that makes $6 billion a year. It's nothing. So the double standard.
Well, and that's exactly the double standard between white-collar crime and the other. Mm. And I'm sorry, I don't care what your political interests are across the spectrum. If your representative, your member of parliament, or your congressperson or senator is not seeking to make sure that people who commit these large white-collar crimes, which cause enormous economic damage, aren't both pursued civilly and criminally, and the law isn't made so that it's easy to do that, vote them out. Because otherwise, all you're doing is creating a criminal system to move money up. And that's one of the biggest things going on in the world.
Trickle up, not even trickle down.
Oh, no, it's but Amazon course, up. It's Amazon up.
Amazon up. Yeah. But of course, isn't the worst thing here, that from the helicopter view, the fact that due to this double standard, due to the plunging and money in politics and so on, and lobbying isn't it true that there's not only a declining trust in government, but there's a declining trust in all large institutions.
Yes.
And that has to, we don't know where it's going because we can't predict the future with any accuracy, but isn't there, you must be seeing this in America too, where there's a declining public trust in institutions. And that cynicism and so on does not help democracy.
It is a corrosive on top of the enormous inequality that I described earlier of how 90% of Americans were better off in the mid-70s than in the last 10 years. On top of that, you have this corrosive influence of the rules don't apply to people at the top. The biggest criminal gang in the world is so influential, they are affecting governments around the world.
And well, who PwC, is that? KPMG, Deloitte, and EY.
Bigger than them are the that's certainly a real problem, and there are solutions to that. But no, it's the Russian oligarchs. When the Soviet Union collapsed, the wealth of the Soviet people was handed over for pennies on the dollar, for fractions of pennies on the dollar, to a handful of people. And they are Putin's criminal gang. There's two classes of oligarchs, the ones from the early 90s and the ones from Putin. But they are, he runs a criminal gang. And they have unlimited amounts of money to spend. And we saw in America how they were influencing voting in ways that it was very hard to see their hand behind it. If you actually read the Mueller report, 408 pages of dense text, you can see all the criminal activity they're describing and laying out, at least by my count and that of a lot of other people who are actually lawyers, I'm just a law professor, at least 10 crimes are laid out. And the Russian oligarchs have been using this money strategically, not only for their own benefit, but to undermine governments. Back in the 70s, when I was at the Los Angeles Times, I wrote a number of front page stories about how the apartheid government in South Africa was spending money secretly in various countries. They created a political party in France and another in Norway and got people elected. They tried to keep a U.S. senator from Iowa who was opposed to them from getting reelected. They tried to buy the Washington Star newspaper. Washington used to have two newspapers, the famous Washington Post and the Star. And when they couldn't buy the Star, they bought the afternoon newspaper in Sacramento, the capital of California, the Union. Sacramento Union has no influence whatsoever. It was an indication of how corrupt these guys were because they were shaving money off of it. But a foreign government through these fronts, trying to get Americans to support apartheid, bought this newspaper. And I showed how they did all, I mean, I wrote for 10 years at the Detroit Free Press and the LA Times about how the South African government was trying to corrupt American politics with money being spent on businesses. And this problem of dirty money, particularly when it's backed by a criminal regime like Putin's, is destabilizing to the whole world. Integrity matters. When the framers of the U.S. Constitution were around, and the King of France gave our ambassador, Benjamin Franklin, a jeweled snuffbox as a gift, it was a major scandal because the framers of the U.S. Constitution, who were not the same as the people who wrote the Declaration of Independence, there's only a small overlap. They understood corruption not in terms of individual venality. We will always have individuals who will be corrupt, right? They'll take money, they'll do something they shouldn't do. They were concerned with institutional corruption. So in America, what's happened is our U.S. Supreme Court, in a ruling, has for all practical purposes legalized bribing politicians. It is no longer a crime unless you're stupid enough to say, here's some money, do this for me. If you do, as happened with the governor of Virginia, former Governor McDonnell.
There's that coal guy in the Democrat coal guy, yeah, too, who's always holds things.
Manchin, he's an old Manchin, but he's an elected official. In this case, there's a business that wanted a bunch of favors from the state of Virginia. And the governor went out and promoted this business and talked about how great it was and encouraged other people to speak well of it. Well, his wife was sent on shopping tours where she spent like $250,000 buying dresses and jewelry, and he loaned them a Ferrari to drive, and he did all sorts of other things for him. And the court held there was no quid pro quo. At no point did the guy say, I'm giving you these things in return for your doing this, therefore there's no crime. They've legalized bribery who's not an idiot, Michael.
Well, there's a very famous, to your jewelry box analogy.
Snuff box.
There's a very famous thing here. There was a government minister about 20 or 30 years ago, a guy called Mick Young, who came back into the country, I think I've got that right, with a teddy bear, probably to give it to one of his grandkids or something like that. Somebody gifted it to him, might have been a corporation or something like that. He had to stand down over this teddy bear. He fell on his sword over a teddy bear, and now we have those same kind of excesses going on. So very similar trends in both countries. But instead of looking for a solution, if we say that we don't address all these things, so the decay in public confidence and trust, right, the stasis in decent policy and regular and regular regulatory inertia.
Right.
You know, going after poor people but not rich people. Where does it all go in 20 years' time?
It leads to authoritarianism. I mean, what happens at the end of the day...
It's already gone there, January 6th,
right,
and Trump and
stuff. Right. Well, the election we just had in America was a clear repudiation of Trump.
It was.
And even Rupert Murdoch, who's been...
Even Murdoch's turn.
Rupert Murdoch knows how to tell which way the wind is blowing, whatever else you may think of him. He's now, with the New York Post, abandoned him with Trumpty Dumpty on the cover.
Trumpty Dumpty.
But if people don't, first of all, aren't raised from the beginning to appreciate that liberties depend on democracy, and that you have to you don't have any freedom of speech if you don't defend the speech of people you cannot stand, you can't detest.
We don't have freedom of speech in Australia. You do in America. It's in the Constitution. But here we've got a thing called defamation laws.
Well,
so if I say something about you, even if it's relatively, inane, and you. It hurts your feelings. You can take me to court and spend public money suing me because you've got hurt feelings.
In America, that's changing, and it's changing rapidly. America's principle has been people who are public figures. So I'm a public figure. I'm on national TV in America all the time. I write best-selling books. I'm a public figure. Most of my 8 children are certainly not public figures. My son Andy is a truck driver. He's not a public figure. You say something, says something about me, even an outrageous lie. I mean, I've had people print that I'm a pedophile rapist on Twitter and Facebook and places like that. It's not actionable. There's nothing I can do about it. And the courts would say, nobody's going to believe that. They know it's nonsense.
Which is
true.
But
if you said it about my son, who's a truck driver,
he
could bring a cause of action against you because he's a private person. But here's the troubling part. There's a big movement by the right in America to undo what's called the Sullivan case. There was an advertisement in the New York Times in 1964 about how the police in Birmingham, Alabama were beating and fire hosing and otherwise mistreating people who were black or white supporters of them trying to exercise their right to vote. And there was a minor factual error. And so it became a court case. And the Supreme Court held that the New York Times wasn't liable. Remember, this is an ad, not a news story. Wasn't liable because the complaining party, the police commissioner, was a public figure, and there was no malice. It was a mistake. It was not a lie. Malice implies that you knew it was a lie and you proceeded anyway. And there's a big movement to undo Sullivan. And remember, Donald Trump said repeatedly, and I remember I've covered him for 34 years, more than 34 years now, Donald said when he was running for president, we're going to get a law passed. They can't write anything about me that I don't approve. That's not a democracy. That's a Putin or a Xi dictatorship. That's what the Ayatollahs have Iraq.
He even cheats at golf, Trump. I mean, who cheats at golf?
A lot of people.